Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin and how did they end? Let's find out on The Fan of History, episode 13. Hello, everybody. I'm Brennan. Last time, we talked about the great states of the world in 900 BC. This time, we're going to talk about the 890s. And joining me, as always, is Dan, the fan of history. Say hello, Dan.
Hello.
All right. So, Dan, I guess let's get started. What is going on that leads us up to these this decade?
Well, in 911, Adad-nirari II started the Assyrian Empire, and he's still the king of Assyria. He does these yearly campaigns to honor Ashur, the god of war. He is going to fight a lot of people. He will be the main character of this story. We'll do a special episode about the early Neo-Assyrian army, and we are soon approaching the point where it becomes relevant to talk about this army. In 900 BC, Babylon in southern Iraq gets a new king, because the old king, Samas-Muddamik, dies, and Nabu-Shuma-Ukin I claims the throne. We don't know their relationship, and this is a very typical Babylonian name, Nabu Shuma Ukin. It means that he is Nabu is a god, it's the scribe of the gods, and it's always just a god. Samas-Muddamik was, Samas is the sun god, and this guy is hostile to Assyria, and he is not happy that his predecessor lost the war with Adad-nirari II in the last decade. But in 899 BC, Adad-nirari II attacks the Bit Adini. This is an Aramean tribe, and to get to them, he has to march across the Hanilgabat towards the Balik River and the city of Kusarina, which is on the other side of the Balik River. The Euphrates, you know, Mesopotamia is the land of the two rivers. That's the Tigris and the Euphrates. Mm-hmm. The Tigris is to the east, the Euphrates to the west. And the Euphrates marks the border of the Middle Assyrian Empire, what the Assyrians are trying to reclaim. And Bit Adini is a powerful Aramean state in the area. They have taken area, which is the Assyrians feel belongs to them. But when Adad-nirari II shows up with the Royal Assyrian Army, the Bit Adini does something clever. They use the out, because when the Assyrian yearly campaign arrives. Its only goal their goal is to get money and stuff and bring it back to Assyria. So you have the option of yielding and paying them. So the Bit Adini says, we yield. Here's a lot of stuff. And they give the Assyrians gold, and there is a list of stuff that Adad-nirari II got, and in this list we find that there are two apes.
Wait, apes? Like...
Yes.
Monkey apes?
These are probably monkeys, and they probably come into the Middle East from Egypt. But we will talk about these lists of stuff the Assyrian kings write, because some of them are preserved in stone, and it's really strange, because you'll find that the Assyrians are obsessed with items related to sleeping and furniture. So you can find, like, we got this really soft linen and this great bed in ivory, perhaps.
Wow.
And chairs and tables and stuff. It's like, why are you taking that stuff? But the most fascinating thing is the monkeys. And the Assyrian kings are really, really interested in monkeys. So you get depictions of this great Assyrian king standing there looking. The Assyrian kings try to look about the same all the time. So all Assyrian kings look about the same. They have this great, what do you call it in English? There's patterns in the beard.
Like,
the braided beards.
Oh, yeah, beard braids. Beard braids. Yeah. That's fine.
So you see this guy who looks like he's 3 meters tall, and he's standing there. Around his feet, two monkeys are jumping around. Because he, like, yeah, I got these monkeys. I killed tens of thousands of people, and I got two monkeys.
Hey, yeah, say it loud, say it proud. You love your monkeys.
Yeah, I don't know why. And this is very good for Egypt, actually, because Egypt has plenty of monkeys.
Oh, all right.
You can have these two monkeys. Oh, that's great.
Right. They're a nuisance. Please take more.
We'll return to these lists of strange things that the Assyrians take. But it's, of course, mostly gold and silver and valuables.
Sure.
In 899 BC, same year, we have this solar eclipse in China, and it provides reliable dates for China. In 911, we had this phenomenon in Assyria, and now we have it in China. And this solar eclipse can be dated by astronomy to this exact year, actually to an exact date for which we know that King Yi was king of Zhou China. And this is happy circumstances because the documentation is bad.
Ah, okay.
And we still have this uncle of Yi, Shao, who is plotting in the background. In 898 BC, Adad-Nirari II has unfinished business with the Temanites. So, and the Temanites are led by Mukuru. He was the he assisted the other Temanite ruler, Nur-Adad, in Nasibina in an early episode. Mukuru's capital is Gidana. I have not been able to locate Gidana, so if anyone knows where it was, I'm very interested. Gidana was heavily fortified, but the Assyrians are inventing stuff for siege warfare. And Adad-Nirari II actually claims to invent the redoubt in this very campaign. And I've tried to understand what it means, because a redoubt sounds not like something that would be invented here.
Right. I was about to ask you. I was like, what does he mean by readout?
Readout. R-E-D-O-U-B-T. So if somebody knows what he means, please tell me. But it turns out that the Assyrian siegecraft is overpowering, and they actually take the city, and we have a total Assyrian victory. And we are not getting details of this these total Assyrian victories yet, but we will very shortly. And I can assure you that it wasn't a nice time for the Temanites. Strengthened by this success, then, in the following year, 897 BC, Adad-Nirari II attacks Babylonia under its new king Nabu-Shuma-Ukin I. And this is an interesting campaign. Nirari II says, I sacked several cities and hauled vast booty home. And that's a pretty short line. There are no monkeys taken.
Right.
So if you actually look at the consequence of the war, it seems that Babylon won. So this is Adad-Nirari II reporting a defeat. And that's what an Assyrian defeat sounds like, if you ask an Assyrian. Because the border is pushed back to the Lesser Sab River, and that's right next to the city of Ashur, the capital of Assyria. So the Babylonia is now really close to Asshur, and it turns out that the location of the ancient capital, this has been the capital of Assyria for 1,000 years or more, that the location of the capital is really bad because it's really not close to anything relevant, and now it's close to Babylonia, which is not good for anyone. So a proper move would probably be to get a new capital for the Assyrian Empire, and that will happen shortly. There is, of course, always the weird relationship between the Assyrians and the Babylonians, because the Babylonians exert cultural influence on the Assyrians all the time. But this seems to be a major victory for Nabushumokin the First. And the Assyrians are on the rise, and this is their first real setback. So what do they do then? Well, they look at the last successful war they had versus the Tamanites. So in 896 BC, we still have Nur-Adad running around. Mukuru was defeated. We don't know what happened to him. But Nur-Adad is still leader of the Tamanites. So it's time to go for Adad-Nirari II to go to his capital, Nasibina, and besiege it again. And he already did that in the last decade, but that time it didn't work out. But now Mukuru has been crushed and no help is coming for Nasibina. And we have, of course, these great inventions in siegecraft, whatever they were, which leads to another total Assyrian victory. And this victory is so total, actually, that the Tamanites disappear from history forever.
Wow.
After this fight. So they are the first real victims of Assyrian warfare. And in this campaign, Adad-Nirari II goes on about his readouts, and I still don't understand what he means.
Well, I looked it up on the internet. And did you want me to read about what the readout is?
So did I, but it seems very medieval.
Right. Every reference I see talks about, medieval England.
Yeah, and canons and stuff.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know why they're only thing I can figure is that he's talking about just places for like just fortified forts, which seems very, you know, who cares? I mean, who doesn't have a fortified fort at this point?
If anyone knows, tell us. Yeah. We'll move over somewhere else. Where do you want to go?
Yeah. All right. So what's going on in Egypt at this time?
Yeah, we have no news for Egypt from this whole decade. Osokon the First is still ruling Egypt and seems to be doing great. Happy times, falling behind slowly. that's all we know about Egypt for this decade.
Oh, no. Well, at least it's nothing terrible for the Egyptians at this point.
There will be terrible things for the Egyptians. In 894 BC, Adad-Nirari II does the best thing an Assyrian king can do in the records. He marched victoriously through the land. The worst thing is that the king stayed in the land, which means that there was no campaign.
Ah.
But now Adad-Nirari II is marching around in the area of the old, not all of it, but a large area of the Middle Assyrian Empire. And all the Arameans are just, we can't deal with this, we have to yield. So wherever he turns up, people just yield, give him monkeys and money. And they're like, uh-oh, don't beat us up. We want to be Assyrians, where do we sign up?
Right. It seems the wisest of plans. If you don't have a substantial standing army, I think just saying, hey, we'll call ourselves Assyrians, why not?
Yeah, the Assyrian army is pretty limited this time. It's an army that sort of gathers in the spring and then campaigns in the summer, and then they have to go back to their farms.
Right.
They can't reach very far from Assyria, and they still are not very good at handling new terrains and stuff. But this is their own terrain. It's the same terrain as in the heartland of Assyria, and it's really close. So these guys know that if they put up resistance, they will be facing these yearly campaigns every year until they're dead. Later king, this is actually, it's on the Kabul River and then south along the Euphrates. And this becomes sort of like a victory tour that other later kings will do the same thing some years. They will walk down this area and scare the Arameans into obedience.
Right.
We can look at what Adad-nirari II has been the king now for 17 years, and the empire is starting to grow and it's looking good. So let's look at what he has actually accomplished by that wasn't the case when he became the king. He has reasserted some of the territorial claims of the Middle Assyrian empires. He has recaptured the land from the Arameans. He reconstructed the palace of Abku, which was a palace that was built quite far from the heartland than in the Middle Assyrian Empire. And this palace is restored and it now becomes a storage depot for the army. And he has also gone on campaigns then in almost every direction. So it's looking good for the Assyrians.
Wow. Yes. When you're able to, you know, extend your land and then set up storage for your armies outside of your main.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Land, that's actually impressive. All right, so what's going on with our favorite Disney fairy tale with Scar and Mufasa and Little Simba.
Yes, I think the the likeness to the Lion King is maybe not the best thing to go with. It was more fun on YouTube when I had the Scar for King Shao and stuff. 892 BC, King Ji of Zhou dies.
Okay.
He dies under unknown circumstances, and his uncle takes power in China. And there might be a move of the capital to another city called Huaili. King Shao becomes the eighth king of the Zhou dynasty. He will rule until 886 BC, so it won't go on for too long, because the nature of Zhou China then is it's a federation of states. There are several states. There are a huge number of states. There are 13 powerful states and maybe 50-ish small states, and they all obey the Zhou, which is actually a small state, but they have the power. They have the mandate of heaven. They beat the old dynasty, the Shang, in the 11th century. And the nobles of China are not happy with the way King Ji died, and they don't trust this new king. And Shao is credited with some really strange acts in this decade. So he has a noble who's called Feizi. Doesn't sound very Chinese to me.
I was about to say, no.
Yeah, and he's put in charge of breeding and training horses, because like the Assyrians, horses are very important to the Chinese. And this guy is the man in charge of horses. And then he gets a grant, a small fief in Qin by the king, Shao. And then suddenly this horse breeding commander noble becomes the heir of the whole kingdom. And the heir used to be the half-brother of Shao, which was whose name is Cheng. But now this Feizi character is suddenly the heir of the whole kingdom. So we don't know why this horse breeding guy was so important, but he really rises to power in Scars China.
Wow. That's with as big as the whole population seemed to be on, you know, familial relations. I couldn't believe that the other nobles would let him get away with it. But I guess he's the king, he can do whatever, but that's amazing.
The way the Zhou dynasty is trying to consolidate its power, because they're now in the eighth king, so they give out important positions to people that serve them well, but these positions become hereditary. Mm-hmm. And over time, the people who are then in power don't have the close bond to the Zhou dynasty that their ancestors had. And that will become a problem. It has often been likened to the feudal system of medieval Europe. And I think that's a mistake. It functions quite differently. Back to Assyria.
Back we go.
In 891 BC, Adad-Nirari II dies. And we seldom get the details of why the king died. It's sort of a sign of weakness that they die, so they don't talk a lot about why the old king died. But we get this chance to talk about Assyrian succession. As we said before, the Assyrian succession is that the king chooses a son. And this time, the son Tukulti-Ninurta II was chosen as the heir. And he's probably quite old at this time, because Adad-Nirari II was king for 20 years. And that's mm-hmm. a long time in this age. So Tukulti-Ninurta II has a grown son who is then chosen as the new heir when he becomes the king. And this son is called Ashur-Nasir-Pal II. And that means that Ashur is the guardian of the heir. And Ashur is truly the guardian of this guy, Ashur-Nasir-Pal II, the new crown prince. And he will very soon become the main character of our show. He is, by some people, considered to be the real founder of the Neo-Assyrian Empire. And you'll realize why when we talk about him. Because he is something extraordinary.
Cool.
I think we'll skip over Europe this time.
Okay.
No, there's one event in Europe. Yeah. Yes. I've looked a lot at the colonies of the Greeks and the Phoenicians, and this is not the age of colonization. But and the Phoenician colonies and the Greek colonies start to happen in the 8th century BC. But this was recently disputed, because a Phoenician colony has been found in Spain with Phoenician artifacts going back to this age, to the early 9th century BC. And we'll talk more about that in an upcoming episode. Mm. But the Phoenicians, and it's weird that the first signs of Phoenician colony, except Cyprus, comes in Spain. That's the entire Mediterranean away. So the Phoenicians might have been traveling very, very far already.
Wow, all the way across the Mediterranean.
Yeah, I will actually make a case later in the 6th century, I think, mm-hmm. That the Phoenicians actually circumnavigated Africa.
Wow.
2,000 years before Vasco da Gama.
I was about to say, that would put put a little twist on world history book.
Yeah, it's also quite interesting to see how far north they got. They might have gotten as far as Norway. So we'll talk more about the Phoenicians when they they will be forced to take even more action on the sea because of future problems. Mm-hmm. So we have a new king in Assyria then. So in 891 BC, Tukulti-Ninurta has to do something then. It's his first year and he wants to do something spectacular. So he marches victoriously through the land because nobody is opposing him. So he walks up to the Euphrates and says, "Aha, here I am. Who wants to fight me?" And people don't want to fight him. And there's a powerful state called Suhu on the middle Euphrates. And they yield. They pay tribute to Tukulti-Ninurta II. They give him a bed. They give him dishes made of exotic wood. He gets a bronze bath. He gets sweet linen garments and some purple wool.
Hey, don't knock it, man. It's he spent a long time out in the field conquering things. He needs a bath and he needs some new linens.
Yeah, they are considerate people, the Suhu.
Exactly.
But then Tukulti-Ninurta II remembers what happened to his father. His father lost the war against Babylonia. But now Tukulti-Ninurta is strong and he marches the royal Assyrian army to the border of Babylonia. And they are about to get some Assyrian opinions. But that's for the next show, actually. So I'd like to finish by mentioning the Villanovans again. As I said before, they are the precursors of the Etruscans. And we'll talk more about the origins of the Etruscans when we get to them. But it is in this very decade that we see new tombs among the Villanovans. They used to cremate their dead, and now we have chamber tombs for important individuals. So that's how we learn that there is now non-egalitarian culture among the Villanovans. So they have chieftains and important people. Mm-hmm. So they are becoming more civilized in a good and bad sense. But that's it for the 890s BC.
All right. Well, folks, like you said, that's it for the 890s. We're going to move into the 880s next time. And that's actually going to be a two-parter. So there is going to be two episodes about the 890s.
Yeah, I'm not sure
the 880s, excuse me.
That is the correct way to do things. So you have to tell us, do you want like 30-minute shows, or should we just go on and make bigger episodes for these decades where we have a lot of information?
Right. We've kept them to roughly half an hour. And if that's the way everybody wants to keep it, just let us know. But if you want us to, like Dan said, just go on for about an hour, if that's a good way to consume this podcast, let us know and we'll be happy to. For us, it's as easy as copy and paste.
Yeah, when we get to the 730s BC, I think we can do 3 hours.
Wow. A lot of stuff happens, as you remember.
Yes.
So, okay. Well, let's see. In the 880s, in the first part, the Assyrians will invent something that will be relevant for all wars up until World War II. So it's not something to look forward to.
Yeah, it will have sort of lost its importance and be really bad in World War II.
Ah. All right. This is the part where you put 5 questions.
No. We do all the contact stuff.
So do everything, then 5 questions at the very end? Okay.
The very end.
Okay, here. Pause for a second. All right. If you enjoyed the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory. You can pledge an amount per show, and it helps us keep going. Specifically, things like Dan had to buy a new microphone, and that's the kind of things that your patronage will support. Also, go to the YouTube site, and please like and subscribe. Give us a review on iTunes as well. This will be on iTunes. And we just want to thank you all for listening.
Well, now, Brandon, it's time to play a game. It's Assyrian or Babylonian.
Assyrian game. Or Babylonian?
Yeah, are you ready?
As ready as I'm going to be, Dan.
We're going to do this. We're going to keep a record of how well you do.
Oh, no.
So you will get 5 questions.
Five questions.
If you get 3 or more right, you win. And if you get less, you lose.
Oh, crap.
So today we're going to talk about cities.
Cities.
So I'm going to tell you 5 cities. And you will have to tell me if they are in Assyria
Uh-oh.
Or in Babylonia.
Can I use the internet?
No, man.
Okay.
And the trick here then is, of course, that everything sounds exactly the same in Assyria and Babylonia.
All right.
Okay, are you ready?
Yes, I am ready. Give it to me.
First city is Borsippa, the city of truth and justice.
Borsippa.
Borsippa.
I'm going to say Babylon.
Ah, you're correct.
Ah, yes. Woohoo! Yeah, I'm 1-1.
1-0 to you.
I'm a winner. Let's move on.
Okay, we have a new city. This time we're going to talk about Kar Shalmaneser, which actually did not exist in 890 BC under that name.
Hmm. Okay. Kar Shalmaneser?
Kar Shalmaneser.
Kar Shalmaneser. I think you're saying it in a way to make me say Assyrian. I want to choose Assyrian.
You are correct again. Oh. This is too easy for you.
Yay.
Next time we'll do pet names.
Pet names. All right.
Okay, we have a third city.
Third city. Bring it on.
Third city. The third city is Kala.
Kala.
Kala. Also called Kalu.
Then I'm going to say... Babylonian?
Oh, it's Assyrian. 2-1 to you.
Dang it.
Okay,
so
a new
close.
City, which we mentioned in an earlier show, actually. This city, there was actually close to this city. It's the city of Deer.
Deer.
D-E-R.
Oh, that's right.
Deer. Deer.
I even think I read it.
It's impossible to pronounce old Sumerian names. But I think it's Deer.
Deer. I know somebody went in there and conquered it and talked about it. Assyrian.
No, it's Babylonian. Oh. The Assyrians conquered it.
The Assyrians, that's right.
Yes.
The Assyrians conquered it. Dang it.
It all comes down to this final city. It's the city of Balavat.
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 Assyrian or Babylonian?
Balavat. I'm trying to think. Does Balavat sound like some kind of highfalutin city of education? Or does it sound like something that would be honoring a god of war?
The University of Balavat or the Army Deposit. The Army Store.
The Army of Depot Balavat. Of Balavat. Here it is for all the marbles. I'm saying Babylonian.
It's Assyrian.
Oh no, I'm a failure.
You lose the first round of Assyrian or Babylonian.
I have failed the listeners
you
educators.
Get another chance.
Okay.
Next time. I'm a fan of history.
Next time. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Okay. Let's stop this now.
All right. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just $1 an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.